The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back. Lord knows they'll try.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the National Intel Report. This is William Repillum. I'm on with Stephen Douglas Whitener, and tonight we have a very special guest with us. We've really been looking forward to this discussion with E. Michael Jones. E. Michael Jones is the author of many books, including The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit, The Slaughter of Cities, Libido Dominandi. He's working on a new book right now called The Dangers of Beauty. He's got, his website is culturewars.com, and he's also has fidelitypress.com. And you can find all his videos on culturewars.com. The really interesting debates and discussions that he has with people, and they're just fantastic to listen to always. Brings up some really great points. So we're just really excited to have you on, Dr. Jones. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, so I guess we will just go ahead and dive in. I guess the two big things that have happened recently, we'll probably get your comments on it, is the Roe versus Wade decision, and also in the New York, I guess the Supreme Court made a decision that the gun law, the constitutional carry in New York the anti-constitutional carry law in New York was unconstitutional. So I think that the Biden administration and a lot of people on the left are pretty upset right now. But I don't know, maybe there's another shoe going to drop. What's your take, Dr. Jones? What, just like to get your thoughts on these recent events here.
Yeah, I think that this is a watershed moment. This is the overturning of what I think would be the Constitution of Imperial America. I'm talking about Roe versus Wade. What we saw recently after the letter from Justice Alito was leaked was a whole new dimension to this that no one had ever talked about before. One Jew after another came forward and said that abortion was a fundamental Jewish value, and that if the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade, they were going to prevent the Jews from practicing their religion. This is a stunning type of announcement, but I think there's some truth to it. I found myself finally agreeing with the ADL because they came out and said exactly the same thing. What they're really saying here is that with Roe versus Wade, the Jews got to impose their religion on the entire United States of America. And they've imposed it for 49 years. And now it looks as if the country has had enough. The Supreme Court has overturned it, but and that's significant. I had a sense that that was the beginning of the end. And then I read Justice Thomas's decision, and I was he's thinking the same way. It's in his opinion, he said that what we're talking about here is substantive due process. This is a term that got used basically when the Supreme Court wants to act as a super legislature, in other words, if they want to impose some form of social engineering on the United States of America that the people would never vote for, they call it substantive due process, and that's exactly what Roe versus Wade was. And now Thomas is saying, well, if Roe goes, then all of those decisions should go. And he mentioned Griswold versus Connecticut, which was in many ways the basis of Roe. That was the decision striking down the sale of laws prohibiting the sale of contraception. But also Obergefell, which is the law that basically allowed for gay marriage, saying the two homosexuals could get married. This was part of the Jewish hegemony over the United States of America. This was how the Jews imposed their views on the majority of the people. And now it looks as if it's going. It's going, and it looks as if we're heading back in the direction of representative government and a country that is no longer going to have to follow lockstep according to some a social engineering program that got concocted in Washington or New York or someplace like that.
Yeah. Yeah, really. I mean, I just really found your analogy so fascinating that you brought up recently about the fetus being sort of the, you can put the fetus on a lot of different things that these operations and these social engineering operations that, and some of these attacks against freedom that the Jews engage in, such as what they did to the protesters on January 6th. You know, if they don't like you, then you're a fetus and you're just abortable, and they'll just abort you even after being born in some case. I mean,
that's right. I think that what happened here is that with Roe versus Wade, there was no equality before the law. There was no equality, period. And what you established was two categories of citizens. The one category is the fetus. So you fit into the fetus category, in which you have no rights whatsoever, or you fit into the aborting mother category, in which you have privilege. So you either have no rights or you have privilege, depending on what the oligarchs are proposing. And that's precisely what happened to, if you take Charlottesville as an example. There were people who thought they had a right to free speech and a right to assemble. That was wrong, because as soon as they identified themselves as white or white supremacist or whatever, or even when it got imposed on them, they had no rights whatsoever, and they opened the door for the people who had Jewish privilege, like Roberta Kaplan, to come in and sue them out of existence. Same thing happened with the January 6th incident was a replay of the same thing, except that the government now imposes terms on you, not just the government, the media. I don't want to make this into some type of libertarian thing. It was the media, in conjunction with government, imposed a category of reality on those people and called this an insurrection. Well, who said it was an insurrection? You said it. These people thought they had the right to demonstrate. And as soon as they said it was an insurrection, these people became fetuses and they had no rights.
Yeah. And then you have Black Lives Matter or whatever other groups that also have Jewish privilege because they support the Jewish agenda of destroying America and the rest of the world and genocide and all that kind of thing. And they're not a fetus. They get to go and burn down the cities and destroy, you have black men murdering white children all around the country, or cutting off a friend of their girlfriend's head, or doing things like that. It's not even talked about because that's not a fetus, right?
Right. You either have Jewish privilege or you're a fetus. That was the legacy of Roe versus Wade. And there's no in between. So either you go along with the agenda, in which case we'll give you privilege, we'll delegate privilege. So like you're a homosexual, well, okay, that's part of our agenda. The Jews promoted gay marriage and so on and so forth. So they will delegate Jewish privilege to these groups. But in the same by the very fact that you can delegate privilege to Jewish privilege to a group means you can remove rights from another group. and you can be declared a fetus, an honorary fetus, which means you have no rights whatsoever. You don't have a right to assemble. You don't have a right to free speech, period. That is the injustice that was the legacy of Roe versus Wade. And that's how the Jews imposed their religion on the entire United States of America.
It's just fascinating how it all just sort of draws right back to that fetus analogy. How, you know, it may very well be that once they did get Roe versus Wade through in 1973, that they set the precedence for being able to call anything a fetus and you know, taking away the rights of anybody they want to, just like you're saying right there. So, Stephen, did you have any comment you wanted to interject here?
Well, if the listeners think that Dr. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah. If the listeners think that Dr. Jones is being anti-Semitic or reaching a false conclusion, there's this article I read earlier in Reason Magazine, which I'll drop here in our chat, and a quote from it as well, which discusses the subject here. Let me get the exact quote before I... Yes, sir. There it is. And it's in Reason. It's written by a rabbi, and it's from Reason Magazine, from Rabbi Michael Simon Temple Beth Kadesh on Abortion, Judaism, and Religious Exemptions. It's the title at the very top is called The Volokh Conspiracy, which I'm not familiar with, but the quote that I wanted to bring out of it was, he said, Jewish law prioritizes the life of the pregnant mother over the life of the fetus, such that where the pregnancy critically endangers the physical health or the mental health of the mother, an abortion may be authorized, if not mandated by halacha. And I'm familiar with what halacha is, but you know, it's a perfect example of how they've turned us into non-persons and into people with no rights at all, that they see us as
creatures
without a soul. Yes, sir, please.
This is not going to fly. If it goes down to the states now, if it comes down to battles in state houses, because the states now have the right to regulate abortion, if they try this, it's simple. Okay, that may be Jewish law. You may be right. I'm not going to dispute that. But who gave you the right to impose that on the rest of us? Who gave you that right? Why wasn't it framed this way in 1973? This is precisely what Bernard Nathanson said at that point. The New York Times reversed this whole thing. They said they always would focus on the Catholic Church and always tried to claim that the Catholic Church was imposing its views on the country by prohibiting abortion. When the exact opposite was the case, it was the Jews who were imposing their views on us by the allowing of abortion. That's what succeeded. So Nathanson at that point said, look, if the people knew that this whole abortion thing was created by a bunch of crazy Jews from Greenwich Village, they never would have allowed it. Well, we can't let that opportunity pass again. Okay, I know polite people don't talk this way, but we have to be honest about what's going on here, and we cannot allow that to happen again. We cannot allow this Jewish privilege to take over state houses now after it failed to take over the entire country. We can't allow that.
Yeah, you know, I want to make a comment about your book, because you have an entire book that goes into – people think that this sexual liberation, a lot of people think it – means freedom, and it means just exactly the opposite. I think your book goes into that in detail, the libido dominante, which the subtitle is sexual liberation is a form of political control. Is that right? Or that's the theme?
Yeah,
of the book.
Yeah, that's the gist of the book. Now, it took a long time. I wrote that book almost 30 years ago, and everybody thought I was crazy when you said that, but now it's kind of finally kicking in. Largely because of the experience that everybody had living in Jewish culture, where one of the things that Jews promote is pornography. Now, I said that years ago, and people called me an anti-Semite. And then a Jewish professor, Professor Abrams from England, takes it. He publishes the same, basically, thesis the same quotations, takes it all from my article and publishes it in the Jewish Quarterly. And he says, but that's a good thing. So the only difference was he said it's good and I said it's bad, but the facts are there. This was a Jewish program from the beginning, pornography like abortion. And there were people who woke up one day and they realized that they were enslaved to their cell phones because they were watching pornography all the time. Well, I was the guy who said it. And as soon as you told people, some people, that it was a form of control, a lot of people stopped doing that. And the word even got out to Rolling Stone magazine. There was something called NoFap November, and Rolling Stone got a hold of it. And they said, this is being orchestrated by anti-Semites. So even Rolling Stone is agreeing with us here, you know? So we're reaching a meeting of the minds. Who would have thought?
It's just fun. It's like God working things out in his way, isn't it? It's really
it seems that way.
Really amazing. You can have them come out and completely confess what's going on and say, oh, well, you're trying to stop being a slave to your passions. You're destroying another Jewish sacrament, right? That kind of the idea of it.
That was exactly the gist of the Rolling Stone article. So that was really stupid, guys. You better go back and go back to Composition 101, maybe, and rethink that.
Yeah. We also have, I think we have Jeremy on with us. I do with Dr. Jones. I'm on Jeremy's show. I'm a co-host on his show at 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern every Thursday. He does his show Monday through Friday at that time. Jeremy, are you with us? Okay, I think he's just probably listening there. But anyway, if you wanted to interject a question, he mentioned being on there. So I've got a whole bunch of material that I wanted to cover with you here. And let me pull some of these other topics up. One of the main things I wanted to get into tonight was the Jewish Freemasonry role in the founding of America. Maybe we can touch on that a little bit. Wanted to also talk to you about the debate you had with Greg Johnson back in, I don't know, it was a couple months ago, I guess it was.
And yeah.
Listening to that, I used to kind of like Greg Johnson. I read his book, White Nationalist Manifesto, and I thought that was pretty good. And it was a time when I was just kind of waking up to the whole JQ thing, which was around late 2017, 2018. And I just couldn't believe listening to this guy promoting fighting the war in Ukraine. I've heard rumors that he's a homosexual white nationalist. I don't know if that's true or not, but I found when you were trying to confront him on having, you know, what you're doing by encouraging, you know, people to walk right in front of the cannons, and fight against the Russians, is you're you know, responsible for their death, right? And I agreed with you on that. And he was like, and his comment was, my conscience is clear. And I just found him to be so pompous and just really disingenuous and really dishonest as well there. I don't know. Did you have any comment on him?
Yeah, well, I had the debate, basically the question was, are you willing to die for the gay disco? The gay disco meaning the American Empire, and the American Empire now being extended eastward, where it bumped into Russia, who decided it didn't want to go any farther. Now, there was something rhetorical about that question at that point, because at that point there were white nationalists who just thought, well, wait a minute, it's the Azov Brigade in Ukraine, and they're Nazis, and I love Nazis, so maybe I should volunteer and go fight for the Azov Brigade, even though what we're really fighting is the gay disco. Well, that became reality very quickly, and now it's a very serious reality, okay, because we're talking about people who are going to die.
Yeah, we're up against a break. We'll be right back with Dr. E. Michael Jones. Stick around, everybody.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
Consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you. Well, the magic's from what you gonna do when things go wrong? What you gonna do when it all cracks up? What you gonna do when your love burns down? What you gonna do when the flames go up? Who's gonna come and turn the tides? What's it gonna do? Alright. Alright, we're back. Dr. E. Michael Jones, and we are really in a good discussion here. Talking about a lot of things. We were just talking about the overturning of Roe versus Wade in the first 20 minutes. And I wanted to, one of the main things I want to talk about, Dr. Jones, is what I asked him to come on the show about. I was talking about Freemasonry, specifically in the role of the founding of America, but also in Europe. I know that you've got a huge chapter in your book, Jewish Revolutionary Spirit, about that. But I'll just give you the floor and kind of whatever you want to talk about with it, see how it pulls in, relates to Judaism specifically. A lot of people don't make that connection between Judaism and Freemasonry. And I think you've done that pretty well in your book. Anyway.
You're right. There's a chapter in the Jewish Revolutionary Spirit about the rise of Freemasonry. So it began as actually Freemasons, and there were groups of guilds, unions, whatever you want to call them, of people who shared the secrets of the trade and with little marks on buildings, and they traveled around and they would build cathedrals and so on and so forth. That's not really what we're talking about here. We're talking about the Whig oligarchs. First of all, they are the ones who were the victors in the Glorious Revolution in England. This put them in power. They created the Bank of England, which gave them funding. And then they took over the Masonic lodges.
Now you're talking about the when you talk about the revolution in England, you're referring to Oliver Cromwell, 1640.
No, I'm talking about the Glorious Revolution, which was 1660, the end of the 17th century. That was one basically where the king died, and it looks as if the successor was going to be a Stuart, and he was a Catholic. And the people rose up, and they didn't want to allow a Catholic into the country, and so they brought in William of Orange and made him king. William of Orange was the prime candidate because he was fighting France at that point, and this was the main concern of England at that time. They had pretty much dealt with Spain. Now there was a battle between England and France over who was going to rule the world. And so they formed the bank so they could lend the king money so he could fight France, and they made a ton of money from it. And at this point, they decided to get into psychological warfare, and they did it by taking over the Masonic lodges. They formed the Grand Lodge, I believe, in 1721. It was intimately connected with the Whig oligarchs. The man who started it was a devotee of Newton by the name of Desaguliers. The Masonic lodges taught Newtonian physics, and they tried to spread them on the continent. Okay, now. They got to the main purpose was to spread them to France so that they could spread subversive ideas that would bring down the fall of the Bourbon monarchy. When the lodge went to Hamburg in Germany, the Germans said, we don't want Jews. We're not going to let Jews in. We know you expelled them. You don't know what you're talking about. We know they live over here. We're not going to let them in. And the English said, no, if you don't let the Jews in, you can't have a Masonic lodge. So it was an alliance between the Jews. The Freemasonry was a lot of Jewish mumbo jumbo about the Temple of Solomon and so on and so forth. It was all just mumbo jumbo. But there was de facto an alliance there between these subversive groups who were interested in overthrowing Catholic monarchs in Europe. So they succeeded beyond their wildest dreams. And they created the French Revolution. And at this point, the Duke of Orléans was a Freemason, and he changed his name to Philippe Égalité. He was promoting the revolution, and he ran afoul of Robespierre when the revolution started to devour its own children. And so he wrote a memoir the night before he died, in which he said that Freemasonry was to revolution the way the candle was to the sun. When the sun comes up, you don't need the candle. And I think that's precisely the history of Freemasonry. It became very influential in the United States of America. There's absolutely no question. The founding fathers were Whig-inspired Freemasons for the most part, and they had a huge effect on American politics over the course of certainly the 19th century. But once we get to the 20th century, once we get to the successor of the French Revolution, which is namely the Bolshevik Revolution, the Russian Revolution, the influence starts to wane. And I'm saying at this point, what you had was a transition where the Jew became the junior partner in this revolutionary scheme. And over the course of the 20th century, he succeeded and became the main partner. And once he became out in the open main partner, once the takeover of our foreign policy was complete, well, they don't need Freemasonry anymore. And so it's basically an obsolete political movement.
Wow. Okay. So in America, right, we've had, it's hard, it's so convoluted, it's hard to know, because I've heard, we're on the break, so we'll wait on that question. I'll formulate it a little bit more. Stick around, folks, we'll be right back.
Truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. because you can handle the truth.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of happy packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Biden wants to save you 18 cents on gas for 3 months. I'm Peter Serafin with today's Liberty Minute. So let's get this straight again. The week that Biden was elected, regular gas was $2.11 a gallon. The week that Russia invaded Ukraine, gas was already up $1.33 to $3.44 a gallon. Now gas is over $5 a gallon, and Biden asked Congress to suspend the 18 cent a gallon gas tax for 3 months. This request comes after Biden has already released over half of our strategic petroleum reserves with little, if any, effect on gas prices. The request also comes after the campaign promised to end fossil fuels, actually canceling pipelines, and describing our pain at the pump as an opportunity. President Biden, stop being two-faced and just admit that you don't care about we the people. You just want to leave a green energy legacy. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivis Pashem, Parabellum.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
All right, we're back. E. Michael Jones with joining us tonight. I'm William Repellum. This is National Intel Report, filling in here for John Stadtmiller, the late John Stadtmiller. And I got Stephen Douglas Whitener with me as well here. So we were during the break, we got into some really interesting topics over the break. One of them you brought up the burkini. Dr. Jones. So they outlawed the burkini in France. I didn't even know what that was.
It's the Islamic bathing suit. So for Islamic countries have a different standard of modesty, what part of the female body can be exposed in public. And basically the answer is pretty much the face, and that's it. So it's a bathing suit where everything but the face is covered. Now, this is conformant to Islamic standards. There are lots of Muslims in France, but the government now has banned this. Now, why would you ban this? Why would you ban the idea that these people don't want to expose their bodies in public? Well, because the French Republic stands for sexual liberation. I think that's the only the man who created the French Revolution was the Marquis de Sade, and he was a pornographer and a famous proponent of what he called sexual liberation. So in keeping with that, not only did they ban the burkini, but you're allowed to, if you're a woman, you're allowed to go topless on the beach. So there you have it. There's the French Revolution in a nutshell.
It's just fascinating to think back. So the, what was his name again?
The Marquis de Sade.
Marquis de Sade, and he was a pornographer back in the late 1700s. So that kind of, okay, so we also brought up, I asked you if you'd talk to the fascifist, right? He's a fantastic researcher. I think he's Indian by race, and he is very much a revisionist historian, and he's done so much, so many great videos delving into forbidden history and on America and on you know, Germany and with, you know, with World War II and all kinds of stuff. So one of the things that he contends, though, is that America was actually you know, a Freemason creation, that, and they intended for it to be what it is now, with the intention of destroying it in the end, and then, you know, turning it all over to the New World Order. That it was kind of just used as a, like a catapult to get the you know, Freemasons or the Jewish oligarchy or the combination of, you know, power hungry criminals to launch themselves up at the top. Now that's going to upset a lot of people, because there's also, because I think there is probably a mix between in the founding fathers that had that intention, but also had the intention of America being a bastion of freedom for the world. What are your thoughts there, Dr. Jones?
Well, few people know that Thomas Jefferson was actually a transgendered woman. People don't know that. No, this is I think this is the reductio ad absurdum of that idea. To think that the founding fathers, like John Adams, who said we have no constitution that functions in the absence of a moral people, would in their wildest dreams conceive of the situation we have right now is beyond belief. So if the fascist, I've been on the fascist show, I admire his research, but I just think that's preposterous. Now, what you did have there was a conflict that did go deep, and that was between the Whigs, the financial class that lived in cities like Philadelphia, and the farming class or the rural population that lived out western Pennsylvania near places like Pittsburgh. They were pretty much completely excluded from the debates that went on during the formative period that around 1776 and afterwards, after the war, that led to the creation of the Constitution of the United States of America. So you had basically a country that was created to favor financiers and oligarchic rule. And one of the first institutions that did that was the Supreme Court, which has always been there to favor. It was supposed to be like Plato's guardians above the law, but it basically favored the interest of the ruling class. And the Justice Marshall, the first Supreme Court justice, initiated judicial review, which basically Marbury versus Madison, which is basically felt that they could strike down laws. And this led to a conflict with people like Andrew Jackson, who felt that the people had the right to determine the form of government and no oligarch should be able to tell them no. And so this has been a constant throughout American history. Now, the problem is, so you had basically two groups of Protestants. You had the Puritans from Massachusetts and the Cavaliers, the Anglicans from Virginia, who basically shared a general framework, even though they were on opposite sides of the Civil War in England. But then with Jewish migration, the late 19th century, you had a totally different group come in with totally different set of parameters basically a group that had no allegiance whatsoever to the general good, the common good, to the state as existed, including all the people. They only represented their own ethnic interests, self-interest. And over this period of time, during the 20th century, this group became more and more powerful, largely because they had control of the media. And the media became more and more powerful. So they started off controlling Hollywood. That led to a big battle because the American people did not like the obscenity and the nudity that they were constantly pushing in their films. That led to a battle between the Catholics and the Jews. The Catholics imposed a production code, 1933, and the Jews broke the code 31 years later, 1965, with a Holocaust porn film called the Pawnbroker. What we've seen is that this group of people has acquired more and more power, largely because of finance, because of usury, because of their involvement in banking. And they simultaneously led to the corrupt moral corruption of the people, which meant that politicians didn't feel they were there to represent principle. They were there to get rich. And if the Jews paid them a lot of money, they would vote for whatever the Jews wanted. That is the situation as it is now. And I've already talked about Roe versus Wade as, I think, the beginning of the end of hopefully the end of Jewish hegemony over our culture.
I really hope so, too. I really, really do, because it's really getting down to some pretty dangerous precedents that we're entering in the country. Having to be so afraid to speak the truth and doing it anyway, and, you know, not having to almost look over your shoulder to think, is there a Jew coming to arrest me or throw me into gulag here, you know? So like what's happened with the January 6th protesters.
Right. Right. That's exactly what happened there. So we have to break the guy who was with Russia today, we have to break the Jew taboo. What do I mean by that? There should be no group in this country that is above criticism. There should be no group, privileged group, that we are not allowed to talk about. Now, the main vehicle for this is the term anti-Semitism. What anti-Semitism means now is that you just said something that Jews don't like. Now, who gave these people veto power over speech in America? Who gave these people the status where no one is allowed to even mention them, much less criticize their actions? This has got to stop. It's got to stop, because until we address this issue, we are just going to be dancing around and just dealing, you know, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Yeah, and it's like people's minds are just, they're wired. I mean, just from all the propaganda and all the movies, everybody's, you know, and mine included, it took me some deprogramming to get to that point. But if you try to go up and just talk to somebody about the Jews, I mean, they just instantly shut down and shut off, and they don't want to hear you, and they just go into some kind of weird convulsive mode. Or you have people that are in charge of the government, and they will, you know, fulfill punishing you or persecuting or prosecuting you for and just be doing completely nonsensical things that do not coincide with the Constitution whatsoever because of this exception.
That's right.
People that are exception to the rule.
We're talking about Merrick Garland right now. He's the head of the Justice Department. This is a man who has no sense of the common good, who's using the power of the law to basically crush people he doesn't like. So it depends on whether you have Jewish privilege or not, whether you get prosecuted. So if you're Antifa and you set the town on fire, they'll call that peaceful protest. We're facing what could be a crisis tonight, today, because there have been reports from the Justice Department that the Bishop of Stockton, California, issued a statement saying that he's been told that to expect attacks on Catholic churches tonight as a protest. This is not protest. I was going to say as a protest against Roe versus Wade. This is not protest. This is terrorism. When they set the church on fire, that's terrorism, and it should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. But when you have someone like Merrick Garland in charge, he's there to defend the Jewish sacrament of abortion. So he's not going to prosecute. We need another guy to actually start enforcing the law.
Yeah.
And that's not even talking about the Soros prosecutors. We haven't even talked about them. The Jews, the people like Larry Krasner, who was put, the Jew who is the district attorney in Philadelphia, was put in there with Soros money. He has led the situation, the city where I grew up, Philadelphia, to the brink of anarchy because blacks know they're not going to be prosecuted. They're not going to be prosecuted, and so crime is rampant in these places. It got so bad in San Francisco that they recalled the Soros prosecutor there, Keza Boudin. So that's got to stop. We can't go in that direction anymore. The clock has expired on that. The shelf life is over on that idea, and that is my hope coming from Justice Thomas's statement that we're going to have to deal with this substantial due process, social engineering. The court simply social engineering things that could never get passed through the legislature.
Yeah. Well, God bless Justice Thomas for his recent language and decisions and his thoroughness in the language and making sure to cover the bases so they can't, the Jews can't come in and exploit the language like they like to do and all the time. So we have a caller online. I think James in New York. Are you still with us, James?
I am.
Welcome to the show.
Waiting for 25 minutes. So my question is not really going to be as straight out as I wish to after waiting for 25 minutes. But I noticed that Mr. Jones, he uses the word Jew and Semite interchangeably. And he just said that this guy Larry Krasner is a Jew, and he also believes Jesus is a Jew. So, you know, we have a major conflict here, you know. Did Shem have some kind of magic sperm through the male, or was it through the female in the Jews' case? I don't know. That somehow magically made them into Jews? I mean, the whole thing is totally twisted, and I don't think you're ever going to investigate in the basis of this. I just think you're going to say a Jew's a Jew and a Semite, and you're never going to go into the depth of the word or words and discuss it the way it was originally intended, which is
right,
both.
Right. Let me respond to that. First of all, I do go into a very detailed discussion of this in my book, The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit. It's the very beginning of the book. I have to define what a Jew is, okay? And I base it on that conflict in the Gospel of St. John, where the Jews come to Jesus Christ and they tell him that they are the seed of Abraham, sperma Abrahamu. Jesus Christ then rebukes them and said, God doesn't need your DNA. That's not exactly what he said, but basically he said, if you want to be a follower, if you want to be a child of Moses, changes the term of the discussion. If you want to be a child of Moses, you have to accept me as the Messiah. So he immediately rules out any type of biological determinism and any type of racism, because the Jews are promoting Jewish racism at this point. And that is precisely the point that I made, tried to make in my book, to break away with this notion of anti-Semitism, which is basically a creation. It's a term that was created by Wilhelm Marr in 1871. So it's a fairly new term that was a biological term and said that the Jews were determined by their biology, by their DNA. Their behavior was determined by their DNA. That is not the case. It's not true. I have never espoused that. What is the identity of the Jew? The Jew is a rejecter of Logos. That's the crucial turning point in history where basically the Jews rejected Jesus Christ, who is the Logos incarnate.
God, when you reject the Jew, Jesus told the Jews they weren't his sheep.
So the
yeah,
Jew.
Now what? Who did James address his first epistle to? The 12 tribes scattered abroad. Yeah.
I'm trying to answer your question. Okay, if you want to know what my position is, that's the position in that I articulate at the beginning of the Jewish Revolutionary Spirit. The Jew, the term Jew is used 71 times in the Gospel of St. John. What they mean by that is cannot be biological. There's a passage in that Gospel of St. John where it says the parents of the man born blind refused to speak out of fear of the Jews. because the Jews threatened to expel from the synagogue anyone who said that Jesus was the Messiah. Well, biologically, they were Jews. Everyone is biologically a Jew, but that's not the issue at this time. The issue is, do you accept Jesus Christ? Do you accept the Logos, or do you reject the Logos? Logos is the order of the universe. Once you reject the order of the universe, you become a revolutionary. And that's what Jews have been ever since. For 2,000 years, they've been revolutionaries. That's what they are today.
So you're saying Jesus Christ did not accept the Logos. Is that
Jesus
correct?
Jesus Christ is the Logos incarnate. The beginning of the Gospel of St. John says, in the beginning there was Logos, and Logos was with God, and Logos is God. Jesus Christ is the Logos incarnate.
You better go back and read the Bible again and get away from that Scofield Bible.
I don't read the Scofield Bible. It's ridiculous. This is ridiculous.
James, I think you're just need to go and read Michael Jones' books. That's comments pretty ridiculous. I'm not really understanding what you're so angry about, James. I'm just not really guessing it. But we got to move on now. We thank you for your call. All right. So, yeah. Hey, Stephen, I'm going to let you chime in there for a minute.
Well, I agree about the Scofield Bible. That as far as that goes, but you know, Dr. Jones seems pretty articulate to me. I'm thrilled to be able to discuss the things that are going on with him today and get his point of view. I don't know why somebody
I am not a dispensationalist. I have never read the Scofield Bible. This is ridiculous.
I've never heard you say anything along those lines ever. So that kind of confused me. And neither am I, sir.
Yes. And on that note, why don't we talk about Christian Zionism for a minute? The foundation of Christian Zionism is the Scofield Bible, right?
Right.
And I've always, you know, loved your commentary about Christian Zionism. I think Christian Zionism is like sort of an oxymoron and the epitome of stupidity in the world. It's just the Christians essentially worshiping their enemies and the enemies of God, and saying that the enemies of God are God's chosen people. And completely mistaking things. So, you know, I mean, maybe this will help James a little bit if he's still listening there. But anyway, go ahead, Dr. John.
Yeah, well, it's the fundamental problem, you go back to the Protestant Reformation, where you break with the church. You break with the church. And at that point, you need a new form law that's going to give you legitimacy. Well, that becomes the Bible. This is all I'm telling you is what Luther did. The principle was sola scriptura. It's the Bible alone. We don't need the church. Well, what's the Bible? If you look at it, there's a lot more in the Old Testament than there is in the New Testament, and it's a lot more interesting in many ways because there's a lot of sex, drugs, and rock and roll going on in the Old Testament. And so what happens here is you get to project your desires onto the Bible and bring out of it what you want. And so the classic example of this is John Milton, the great poet who wrote Paradise Lost. He was a Puritan. Puritans are Judaizers, who are Christians who act like Jews and think like Jews. And he's got a problem. His wife just left him. And on top of that, he's kind of attracted to this other woman, and he'd like to cast off the first wife and marry the second one, which is known as divorce. And it turns out that Jesus Christ had some really specific things to say about divorce because it was an issue. He never said anything about sodomy or abortion, but the big issue was divorce. And he said, anyone who divorces and remarries is committing adultery. Well, that doesn't sound good. So what does he do? Well, he shifts the emphasis to the Old Testament and said, well, Moses allowed people to have many wives. And that's you see the Judaizing that begins, and then it only gets worse when you get to someone like Scofield and these people who basically writes notes to the Bible that says the exact opposite of what it says. But it's popular with the Jews. Now, Louis Untermeyer, who was a influential Jew from New York City, persuaded the Oxford University Press, which is a very prestigious press, to publish the Scofield Bible. And at that point, it took off. And it became, that's the beginning of Christian Zionism. And what you saw over the course of time is there are a lot of preachers, there's no control over these preachers, and they were opportunists. And I'm talking specifically about a preacher like Jerry Falwell, who was very influential, created the Moral Majority. But that sounds great, and he was against abortion, God bless him. But he was also a Christian Zionist, and he was so effective that Menachem Begin gave him an airplane so that he could fly around the country and preach the gospel of Christian Zionism. That lets you, that pretty much tells you what's going on here. These are paid agents of the Israeli government who get these gullible Protestants to pull the lever, the right lever, when it comes to elections, because there aren't enough Jews in this country to get someone elected dog catcher. Apparently, Jerry Nadler, the Jew, he's going to lose. He was be the last Jewish congressman in America.
Oh, I hope so. I hope he get rid of him. Hey, we got thanks so much for that. We got one more caller, Joe in Florida, if that's all right with you, Dr. Jones.
Sure.
Should be a quick one. All right, Joe, welcome to the show. Thank you for calling. What's
Thank
on your
you,
mind?
William. Thanks a lot. It's an honor to talk to you and to the great Dr. E. Michael Jones. Doctor, I'm a huge fan of yours. Can you give us a little insight into why is it essential to expose the Holocaust narrative and the power that it has in culture in our society? And are you writing about that? Is there something coming up?
Yes, yes. We're pretty much done with a book. I'm co-authoring a book, and it's on the Holocaust narrative, which is basically when it began, who did it, and so on and so forth. There are two articles in Culture Wars, in back issues of Culture Wars, which are two of the chapters in the book. So if you want a sense of what it's going to be like. But it's important because it is the founding myth of the American empire. And I'm saying by that, I mean the American empire as it emerged after World War II. This is the founding myth. It's also the founding myth of the State of Israel. And so it's important. It's important to know this because whenever anyone gets out of line, this is the club that is used to beat them back into submission. So the classic example was the trucker convoy in Canada. What did Justin Trudeau do? Did he sit down with the truckers and say, look, okay, what's your problem? Okay, it's COVID. We're going to end it. No, he didn't do any of this type of stuff. What did he do? He demonized them as what? As Nazis. Well, there was one guy that walked through the crowd with a Nazi flag. He was probably paid by Justin Trudeau to do that. It's because an agent provocateur. We know about them. But this is the narrative that's the super narrative. And this shuts down every other narrative. It trumps every narrative because it is the founding myth of the American empire. And that's why I think it needs to be examined so that it can't be used against us anymore. So the other example is the Jewish lady who's the member of parliament in Canada. And she gets up and she announces, I have relatives who died in the Holocaust. Now, as soon as someone says that, it's over. You can head for the exit because you can't disagree with this lady. Once she says that, it's over. And then to show you why she needed to say that, is she said that she was horrified by those nasty truckers out there beeping their horns because Hong Kong means Heil Hitler. I'm not making this up. She said that. Hong Kong, yeah. It means Heil Hitler. Well, this is the reductio ad absurdum of the Holocaust narrative, isn't it? They can shut you up. They can say anything as long as they appeal to this narrative. Now, that's got to be explained, and that's what we're going to do in this book.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Jones. We are at the end of the show, and it just went by so fast. Tell people real quick where they can go. Culturewars.com, FidelityPress.com.
No. Culturewars.com, FidelityPress.org. Both of these, magazines and books.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Dr. Jones. We're going to continue on the second hour and take some calls. and continue our discussion.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.